please. If I can have several men help me, that would be nice. Please. Cliffy. Brother Mike. Old man. You don't want to give Mary notes, Cliffy, or what? You're welcome to hit him, sister. Judah hasn't hit him enough recently. That's the problem. Oh, that's right. She's prepping for surgery, so. Let's all stand, please. 2 Samuel 17, please. We'll start reading in verse, 24. For you that ever pray for me in my preaching, I would appreciate your prayers. I'm chapter 18, an early part of chapter 19 is the only part of 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel that I don't want to preach on. I've thought about having Tim preach it or Brian. There's only a few things that make people angry, especially people that don't listen well. Get to their children. In chapter 18, I'm assuming you know where it goes. How does Absalom end up? That's not the problem. David is willing almost to sacrifice the entire nation for Absalom. Did you hear that? Fact is, Joab says, if you don't do something, it's going to be worse for you than it's been for you your entire existence. Do you remember reading this? Talking about parenting is very difficult for some people. So I'm going to try to duck and dodge. Tonight is going to be nothing but sweetness. This truth, this is just sweet. This is everything except one verse we're going to read is just nothing but sweet. I'm going to preach on what I've entitled this of memorials and monuments. In these two texts, we have some people that were leaving behind some memories, and one guy decided to build a memorial to himself. 17:24. Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, and he and all the men of Israel with him. So Jordan, if you look up like this, I'll do it this way. Jordan's over here, right? Yes. They were fleeing out of Jerusalem this way. David was already this direction. Now Absalom has crossed over the Jordan River also. So we're about to get to the battle. That's what it boils down to. Would you think there might be a little fear involved here? A little danger? Yes, I think that's the point you should be getting. Verse 26. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. And it came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim that Shobi, the son of Nahash of Reba, of the children of the Ammon, and Machir, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gilead of Rogalim. Man, those are names, aren't they? They brought beds and basins, and earthen vessels, and wheat, and barley, and flour, and parched corn. You'll probably notice corn is in what? And beans, and lentils, and in parched. Actually, it's in italics too. The weirdest thing is you have the same Hebrew word. I read it in Hebrew two different times. And the ESV doesn't even translate the last one. Because it's just like left hanging. Something was, well, we don't know what it was. Parched something. Honey and butter and sheep And she's, and I love Germanic words in the English Bible. You call cattle all the time kine, don't you? Cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, meaning these three guys said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Chapter 18, verse 18 is the opposite kind of text. I'm not going to really focus much on it, just a little bit at the beginning. Now, Absalom in his lifetime, there's irony is dripping right here because he's just died. In his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, or ESV I think says a monument, which is better than a pillar. He reared up something so people could what? Remember him. He goes on to say, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. For next week or the week after, it would be wise for you to realize he had three sons. So your first question should be, where's his sons? And the answer is, we don't know. But whenever he reared this up, his three sons must have been dead. But it does say he had three sons. So he says, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar or this monument after his own name. And it's called unto this day Absalom's place or Absalom's monument. And monument isn't interpreted, but otherwise he was doing something to memorialize himself. Now, I'm going to focus tonight on something simple. I want to be a blessing to you that are faithful. There is a certain kind of Christian that wants to have a memorial to his name. I was in a service years ago where a preacher, whose name will remain unmentioned, got up. He had written a book. He held the book up, and he said, this is the book that I'll be remembered for. Book probably hasn't been in print in 20 years. You don't tell God what you will be remembered for. Actually, you don't even live your life that way. But we have three other guys that just did the job. You understand? Doing the job. People had need of food. They supplied the food. Which one do we want to remember? Oh, we don't even have a clue where Absalom's monument was. If you read in your notes, this is not from me. This is from an old series of books. And I heard it quoted in a couple places, so I thought I should put it in here. The sacred historian was doubtless guided by a principle of selection when he inserted the names of those three men in a book that is to abide through all time. That is a beautiful thought. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this night. May I be an encouragement to those who are faithful, who are engaged, who are serious. And we all sometimes wonder, are we going to be known? Will people remember us? Will people know what we did? Will people care what we did? And it's a struggle sometimes to think that we might spend a lifetime in a place and 30 seconds later, the place be changed, or us forgotten. Help us tonight to hear these simple truths, I ask in Jesus' name, amen. All right. This week, I don't know why, do you ever have thoughts about the past? For some reason, I had a thought about the first Fundamental Baptist Church I was ever part of. It was a brand new church, and actually, the church met in a little grade school. We met in the gymnasium or the cafeteria. It's probably the cafeteria, but it was a big cafeteria. We had risers, and we had chairs, and we met there. It all started in December of 1975 with Rick Bartley. I was seated at Beaufort Naval Hospital in the barracks for the corpsmen, and we were seated in an area, they called it a lounge, but it was actually where the steps went up. And the steps had an area that was pretty broad, and they had a TV in there and a couple of chairs. And Rick and I worked with Rick at the Paris Island. We walked back there, we sat down, turned the old TV on, you know, one of those old clunkers. And we were talking about church. Now, Rick was different than me. Rick was a long-term burnout from drugs. I don't know how he got in the Navy, but in the 70s, you get in the Navy no matter what. When I say burnout from drugs, you understand acid and things like that does real damage to your brain. He was a burnout. He was like, whoa, man. That's who he was. Rick started going to this church, and I was going to a little church literally right outside the Naval Hospital. There was a Southern Baptist church there, a decent church. I had gone there the first couple of weeks, three or four weeks of December. It had to be because I got there in late November. So I was only there at Beaufort for a short time. But anyhow, I was going there. We started talking. He says, Ralph, why don't you come and visit this church with me? And I said, I'd love to. You know, this church was okay, but nothing special. So we went to Victory Baptist Church meeting in a school. I don't remember the people well because I was only there a short time. I remember the young guys. I remember Dr. Cropsey. I'm going to try to have him here someday. That's done mission work in Togo, West Africa. And our missionary, Peter Silseth, just met him. And Peter sent me a picture, and it was interesting. Anyhow, I remember, but the only other person I remember is the song director and the choir director was a pre-incarnate Louis Heras. He was not a sailor. He was an E-7 Marine. And all I remember is, the guy couldn't, I don't know if he could sing or not. I do know this, when he stood behind the platform to sing, you sang because he had that look, you know, Louis does that. He didn't have that look, but he was an old jarhead from Vietnam. Every time he'd get up there to sing, you would start singing because you're thinking, if I don't sing, he's coming out after me. He always led the singing with one finger. We had a choir. You know how bad the choir was? I sang in it. We didn't have the ability to sing parts. Nobody knew how to sing parts. Everybody tried to sing the melody. We couldn't even sing the melody. Oh, it was bad. But I fell in love with that church. I love Pastor Millard, Mrs. Millard. Here's what's strange. I was thinking about that church at the very end of my time, which wasn't that long there. Somewhere in May, June, Mrs. Millard and Pastor Millard said, Ralph, we're looking at a piece of property. We want to buy a piece of property so we have a church property where we can build our own building and have our own place to meet. Pastor Millard said, I'm going to go over there on a certain day. If you have the day off, I'd like you to come with me because I'm going to cut brush and cut trees off of this property so the church can come over and see the property that we want to buy. Well, and I was 18 years old. I was still from the farm. I knew how to handle an axe. So I don't know why I'm thinking of this. I went over with Pastor Millard, and we spent one whole day. Have you done this recently? Cutting brush and cutting down trees. Not big trees, but, you know, things anywhere from this to about that. Now, they're not good trees. It's South Carolina. It's a different kind of wood than we have up here. It's, you know, pine and stuff like that. But we're cutting down trees. We're cutting down brush. We're cutting down this big area. And as I thought that about that story, I thought, does the pastor of Victory Baptist Church today, look me in the eyes, please, does he even know the founding pastor's name? And you know what the answer is? He does not. We don't have very good memories. So I'm going to say this to you. You can do something. You can do the greatest thing that's ever been done on planet Earth to serve God. And 30 seconds later, people will forget who you were. Welcome to reality. By the way, they don't remember me there. They don't remember me cutting down this plot of ground. That was 44 years ago. That's back when I could handle an axe. I can still pick an axe up, just can't use it. So I want to ask you a question. Do you understand the difference between memories and a memorial? Some people want to set up a memorial to themselves, just like Absalom. Look at these texts, would you please? And we're going to talk, this is just positive this evening. It was encouraging to me as I read it. Look at this text. Now, Absalom, in his lifetime, I always like that. You don't even want to wait because you're thinking people are going to forget you pretty quickly. So in your lifetime, had taken and reared up for himself. I wrote down in my notes, you know, not in these notes, just for myself when I was reading this text over and over. He built a monument for himself, by himself, to himself, that doesn't exist anymore. But then there was a woman that did something for our Lord. I think it was called, she anointed him. Matthew 26 says this, verily, you notice the I is Jesus speaking. I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this, that this woman hath done, be told for a what? What do we find about living memorials in this time? Number one is service in dangerous times. In the text, friend, dangerous times is the proper concept. For us, at least in this part of our life, none of us have ever really been in danger for Christianity. So I'm going to use the term for us, difficult times. Because most of the time, anything that matters, there's a whole bunch of difficulties you got to get over to get there. Let me see if I can still do it. I don't do it anymore. I don't think I've done it in 23 years I've been here. This is the first time. When I became a pastor in St. Louis, I started understanding people. And I didn't like what I understood. If you're a teenager, I'm going to get around to serving God when I get married. If you're newly married, hey, I'm busy establishing my family. I'm going to get around to serving God once we get this home established. Once you have children. Well, Lord, Pastor Warren, I'm going to do that stuff, but wait till the kids get a little bit older. Because we all know when they get older, they're easier to deal with. When the kids get older, it's, Pastor, I want to do these things. I want to give. I want to serve. I want to teach. I want to support missions. I want to do all these things. But, Pastor, please let me get these kids reared. And then there's college. How's college treat? Well, by the way, some of you don't know, but if you send your kids to college, you're all very wealthy during that point. I can remember there was that period of time. It was a wonderful time. And our kids went to Bob Jones and they worked, so they paid a lot of their own way. I remember there was a year that John and Amy were same time. Oh, that's a blessing. Now, of course, now if you're independently wealthy like Jin Jin over here, it's not a problem putting two kids through Christian college, is it? They're cheap, right? It's very inexpensive. Wait a minute. Pastor, I'm going to serve the Lord once my kids finally get done with college, because then I'll have freedom. Well, when the kids finally get done with college, it's like, Pastor, I'm going to do that, but you know, we need to take some vacations because we haven't had time. And you know what I learned about people? Yes or no? There is never a good time. So if you're waiting around, keep on waiting, because you're going to find out something. About the time those kids get away from home, your parents get old. Then you got to take care of your parents. And about those time those parents finally disappear, some of you want your parents to disappear quickly, about the time your parents finally disappear, what happens then? Then we get old, exactly. My friend, there is never a good time to do anything. So my first point from the text is service for us in difficult times. It's never a good time. Never. Pastor, I'll do that right after I buy my new car. Well, once you get a new car, your wife needs a new car. Pastor, I'll do that right after I get my car paid off. Folks, by the time you get the car paid off, you need another car. Yes, you got the point. This period of time was very dangerous because David had crossed. I'm going to do this way as you look at me. He had crossed the Jordan west, and Absalom had followed him, and these men came out of the woodwork, so to speak, to serve David and the people in very dangerous, and in our case, it would be difficult times. In your notes, On just about any level, this was not a wise move, at least in my opinion. First of all, David was in retreat. Why do you come and help someone in retreat? Next, Absalom was in pursuit. Can I ask you a question? If these three men would have been caught by Absalom, what would he have done to them? You understand, this is not a joke. Friend, I want to say this to you. There is never a good time to do the right things. You're going to wait around. It's just like, Pastor, give me a couple more years. Hey, you know what I have? Bill Schroeder, Jenny and I were at Oak Forest Baptist Temple, which was a church like this. It was the largest church in the Chicagoland area of our kind of church. Ran 1,000 when we were there. Oak Forest Baptist Temple, I'm not mad at anybody. This is not about you. So if you take it about you, you're missing the point. In 1 year, because he had been there since 1960-something, and this was, we were there in the late 80s, almost 90. In 1 year, he had 200 couples retire and move from his church. What do you think that did to Oak Forest? It decimated that church. You picked up the bottom pieces. By the way, I'm not being mean, but the particular gentleman that you sat under never told the truth because he never was there in the prime days when that church was flowing. And everybody got to a certain age and they retired to Timbuktu. And all of a sudden, you have this new building and he's sitting there holding the bag. Then they sell that property and move, and today it's a tiny church compared to what it once was. Folks, there's never a good time to serve the Lord because you're always looking for what you have to do. These people just came out and did it. Difficult times. Look in your notes. That's not about anybody. That's just facts. David was in retreat. Absalom was in pursuit. David was most vulnerable. And Absalom had all the advantages. And when you look at this story, you're kind of like, what are you guys thinking? As I say in your notes, what were those advantages? Here's some of them. He had most of the people, most of the military. He had a stable base called Jerusalem. You probably heard of it. He had supply lines. Are supply lines important? Where do you get food at? You know, when I was a kid, I thought about armies went off to war, but I never thought somebody has to feed them. Yeah, I didn't think about that. David is over there, folks, in the wilderness. There's no food. There's no supply lines. From you looking at this, Absalom had all the advantages. He had counsel. He certainly had the fear factor. In your notes, at best, the outcome was uncertainty. It was uncertain. And it was probably in Absalom's favor. If you would have just looked and said, who do you think is going to win? David's out in the wilderness. He has a minority of the people, a minority of the army. He has no supply base. He has no stable base, no supply lines. And Absalom's chasing him. And you're thinking, hey, look, look, look. Hey, hey, hey. Three people come out of the woodwork. You're waiting around till you get where you're going to do what you're going to do for God. Good luck. I want to say this. Mary and Phil have been here for... they should be here 6 years, but they're going to be here 3 years sometime soon. They join right in. You know, many military people don't join in anything. Because the moment they get here, they're thinking, when am I leaving? Unfortunately, Americans are that way. And one Sunday night in St. Louis, one Sunday, two families visited our church. The one family joined and was there all seven, almost 8 years that I was there. When we first met them, Jenny knows who, they're people that I like, they said this to me. They got married almost identical time we did, didn't they? They had moved in 1989. Between 79 and 89, they had moved 14 times. You say, why? Climbing the corporate ladder. When do you serve God? Whenever I finally get stable. When does that happen? I believe the strength of these three men is this. Service in difficult times. A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of the world, unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. There's something about difficult times that some people rise to the occasion, some people run from the occasion. John 15, greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. I'm going to guess that's the ultimate service. You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you. Number two, it was not only service in difficult or dangerous times, it was service with real help. And I like this, real help, what they needed. I'll give you this as we read through this. They brought beds and basins and earthen vessels, wheat and barley and flour. And it says parched corn. Probably modern translations will say parched grain. It obviously wasn't corn, correct? We know this. It was grain. And beans and lentils. And then the Hebrew just has the word and parched. There's nothing else. I don't know what that means. And then they had honey and butter. And butter, some translations will have, what else could it be? Ezra, when I was in India, I learned, I think, exactly what this is. It might have been butter, by the way, but I doubt it. If we're thinking butter like we put butter on bread. When I'm in India, what do they have that white stuff they dip it up? Curds, right? I mean, why do you do that? Because after you eat all that hot food, fire shooting out of your head and out of your ears, you need something to cool you off. So I saw Emily. She didn't take the curd. She just took the bucket. Trying to cool off. My guess is that's what he's talking about. By the way, for you city slickers, I know all of you old-timers, you've done this 1,000 times because you milked a cow every day like I did. Have you made butter before? Do you know you can do something else but make butter? You can make cottage cheese if you know how. You can make curds. We used to do all that weird stuff. My mother used to do all that stuff. All I did, Mary, have you ever made butter? We had a cranker. We put the cream in the gallon container. Then we do it backwards. Then we do it this way. Or you can put it just in a thing and shake it. Either one works. And my favorite kind of butter, and I can tell if you're a city slicker or not, in the spring when the cow eats wild onions, it comes straight through to the milk. Oh, you say, who ate that? Who drank that milk? I gave that to Louie. No, we gave that milk to the cats. Ugh. In your notes. My favorite statement is next. Many people follow the old adage about helping a ministry. We want to help in any way we can, as long as it doesn't involve people or money. Dada, you have a project at your house? Dada, I feel your pain. I want to do anything I can to help you as long as I don't have to show up or help you with any money. Can I say something about these people? Hey, David's people needed real help. And guess what these three guys brought? Real help. They brought what they needed. I just got another picture. Christy, I sent it to you. This is a week or two back. Our missionary in San Paulo, Robert Coelho, sent me a picture. They got that roof on. Oh, he was excited. It's all the roof is finished. Don't ask what the services are going to be like, because remember, this is not America. You don't have to have the buildings finished. When I go to the Philippines, you'll have unfinished buildings for 30 years. That's common. You know, things are partial finished, and the wiring in the Philippines scares me to death. If you have never seen it, I would tell you to look at it, but it might scare you just looking. You look at it. You think of the worst piece of spaghetti you ever saw, a big bundle of spaghetti. That's the wiring that goes, ooh, it's scary. We better move on. This, instead, is the very definition of help. First of all, they see a need. You know what it means to see a need? You walk into the building. Or you hear of a missionary, one of our missionaries you see it, or you hear a need. Next, they met a need. You meet a need. See a need, meet a need. Isn't that how it works? That's what they did. They knew that the David's troops and his people had no food. So they see a need, they meet a need. It's really that simple. Next, they meet the need, and this is actually as important as the first two. They meet the need where, when, and how it needs to be met. They meet the need where, when, and how it needs to be met. There's something beautiful about that. So they not only met the need, and they saw it and met it, but they did it where it needed to be. Folks, you got to take the food to them. That's the where. The how is you got to take it there. They can't get down to you. And they need it now, not 10 years from now, or not yesterday. They need it. So they did that very well. Next page. Did I already give you the last one? No, I didn't. Let me give you that. This is probably the nice one, too. They work with others to meet the need. And most of the time, we can't meet all the needs ourselves. Let me tell you a little story that happened this week. Once in a while, somebody will put the mail in the boxes that's not Jan. Now, Jan is a perfectionistic on steroids times 10. Jan has perfect got that office organized. But don't get in her road and don't mess up her organization if you want to survive. But once in a while, Jan lets somebody else put the mail, and if they do, they always put stuff in my box that I don't need. Sometime last week, they put in my box, and it happens once in a while, and I do it often, but they put in my box a bunch of receipts from different mission boards. You know, we support lots of missionaries. Those mission boards send back a receipt. So I know if our missionaries are being, pretty quickly figure out, we're actually doing the things we say we're doing. I'm looking at this mission board, this missionary. Let me see, what is the missionary? He is in, I saw about five that day. This missionary is in Portugal. What's his name? The Wares. We're supporting the Wares. I didn't know that. January, February. And then there was a month, there was a huge gift. I don't know who did that. But it caused me to do what? It caused me to smile. Because there's somebody in this church that probably read their missions report. And at that month, they probably said, we need X, for Y. And guess what they did? They didn't come to Pastor Warren and say, Pastor Warren, hey, Pastor Warren, I'm going to do the unthinkable. I'm going to give $50 more than usual. Here, come over here so I can. Somebody in this church gave them a big hunk of money. You say, who was it? Don't know. Do you know that happens all the time? You say, why don't you tell people? Because I don't know who does it. I don't know when it's done. All I can say is for all of you that only pray and think about yourself, God forgive you. For you in this room that are always thinking about other people, God bless you. And that happens all the time when I see missions reports. Somebody realizes, hey, there's a need. Why haven't we taken care of the need? No, that's what a blue-collar person says. They just meet the need. Or they meet it with several other people. Yeah, that's Christianity. Next page. Service from strange places. If your mind is not a sticky mind, these people's names won't mean anything to you until tonight. It says, and it came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobi, the son of Nahash, of Raba, of the children of Ammon, and Machir, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gilead of Rogalim. Those are some strange people. May I say this to you? One of them is unthinkable. We'll get to him. When I read this, this is what strikes me. These three strike me strange for several reasons. First of all, there's no big name people here. Do you know what a big name person is? Sometimes somebody gives something, and Bambi sometimes will come in, and we'll talk about finances, and she'll say, yes, somebody gave money. Now, her problem is either she doesn't know who gave or she won't tell me. I say, come on, tell me who it was. No. Tell me, no. But you know what's beautiful? Do you know what's beautiful? Yes or no? It's when I don't know who it is, you don't know who it is. It's just a no-name person. Do you understand that's Christianity? As long as I'm here, we're not going to have anything out on back walls with your name on it. If you're looking for that, you're in the wrong church. By the way, do churches do that? Oh, my goodness, it's embarrassing. By the way, you have your monument. You have your monument to yourself, by yourself, and for yourself. Yes. Next, no one from Jerusalem. Friend, in Israel is like London. When you go to England, everything is in London. Most countries, not some big countries aren't, but many countries, everything is in one city. Nobody was from Jerusalem. And lastly, no one from an important family. None of the important families gave. Well, the only guy that makes sense is Barzillai. For as far as we know, we don't know a lot about him. We'll learn about him a little bit more later. He was simply a godly man of long-term good standing. He was an old guy, 80 years old. You know the story. We'll get to it in a couple weeks. Good guy. But folks, Shobi. Did you notice Shobi? Do you know anything about Shobi's family? No, you don't. But you're going to. Strangely enough, I'm reading a book. Yes, I'm always reading books. I'm reading a book on the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's a little technical, but one thing it talked about was the story that's found in 1 Samuel. There has been a separate story from the Bible floating around for at least 2,500 or 600 years, where they add a little bit to 1 Samuel, but you understand it in 1 Samuel. It's probably just addition to explain it. Let's look at the text. Let's read 2 Samuel 17:27. His name was Shobi, the son of whom? Nahash of Reba, of the children of? Were the Ammonites Israel's friends? When's the first time we run into these people? This is the passage that has some addition in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Then Nahash the Ammonite. Shobi's what? Shobi's what? His father. Shobi the son of Nahash. I'm thinking that's father, yes? Probably. Maybe it's grandfather. It's possible because sometimes father doesn't mean it can be skip a generation. But Nahash came up and encamped against Jabesh Gilead, and all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us and we will serve thee. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition will I make a covenant with you, that I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for a reproach upon Israel. Now, folks, please look at me. You say, why the right eye? Military people carried a shield, and that shield was used to protect your face, and you could only see out. The moment you lost your right eye, not only was that humiliating, it also what? It eliminated you from fighting. Now, if you want to do this, you can look it up. I'll let you do this. You can Google it. I guarantee you can find it. There is a little section that's added to Samuel that it's found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's about 4, 5, 6, or 7 lines, and it says this. He had gone from city to city doing this already. And everybody had surrendered. And there was all the people on that side of Jordan had lost their right eye. Yeah. It's pretty wise military, isn't it? You eliminate your opposition. They can never fight. And even if you do fight, it's weird to fight with one eye. But if you have a shield in front of your eye, you can't even see. Friend, wait a minute. Shobi brought David what? What? Who's his dad? Even if it's his grandfather. Who's his grandfather? Well, let me ask you a question. Who's his brother? Glad you ask. 2 Samuel. Now we've skipped forward to the second book. And it came to pass after this that the children of The king of the children of Ammon died. Who was the king? Nahash. And Hanun, his son, reigned in his stead. Then said David, I will show kindness. You remember I preached on this? He showed kindness to Mephibosheth. He wanted to show the kindness of God to this guy. So he sent some guys up there to be a blessing. And what did he do? He cut their beards off in half. He cut their clothes in half. He humiliated them, which caused a what? Caused a war. Yes. And smack dab in the middle of this war is what? David's sin with Bathsheba. 2 Samuel 12:29. And David gathered all the people together and went to Reba and fought against it and took it. And guess what he did? He took their king's crown from off his head. Shobi's either father or grandfather was God's enemy. His brother, or maybe his father, was God's enemy. And here is Shobi. Who in the world does this? That's the strangest part of this story. Here's David out in the wilderness with nothing, and one of the men helping him was an Ammonite that was all bound up in all of this stuff. But somehow God had reached even into the Ammonites and had done some good things. I bet you never saw that before, did you? Let's continue. Machir. He is from, and I've already said many times, Lo is the Hebrew word for no. You know this from Hosea. Remember, Lo Ami, no, are not my people. Lo Ruhama, not mercied. Lo, Lamed and Aleph, just means no. Dabar is the word for word. But I think it could mean something like this, and it's hard to know for sure. It means no word. It could have been used like, you know, colloquially as no place, or even no name. And this is a joke. I put joke there so you get the humor. I was reading a commentary, and they said, we don't know for sure where this place was in the ancient world. And I laughed, and I'm like, well, of course not. It was called no place. It was a no place. Haven't you been to some of those no places? Ezra, when I went over to your dad's, the first place we stopped, you don't even know where it's at. All I know is we're driving down a road, we go down another road, and then we cross like swamps. There's like this causeway, and on both sides is swampy stuff, and it's out in rice fields and stuff. And we get over there, and there's a town, and there's a church. It's called No Place. Nobody knows where it is. Oh, wait a minute. Here's God making fun of us. You know who does God's work? People from No Place. Who else? People that should be God's enemies. Yeah, that's who does the work. I love this. That's just a great story. We don't know a lot else about this guy. I say in your notes, yet this man had a habit of helping those in need. We only find him twice. We find him helping David when David is in need, and we find him helping who else? Mephibosheth. When Mephibosheth had nothing to give him, all we know is he's the guy that took Mephibosheth in. And it says, when they were looking for Mephibosheth, the king said unto Ziba, of course, where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lodabar. So all I know is, whoever this brother is, he's always one of those people helping other people. How do you make a memorial? Well, as opposed to a monument, or memories, you know, how do you do the memorials and the monuments? You make it for yourself, by yourself, to yourself. On the other hand, there's a place of just serving in difficult times, serving with real help, being a real blessing to somebody, serving from strange places, an old man, an Ammonite, and a nobody from no place. To me, that's beautiful. My favorite verse in the New Testament, I've preached on this and I will again. If I could be one person, have you ever asked yourself that question? Many of us would have different opinions, but if Ralph Warren could be one person, I would prefer, of all people, human, obviously, to be Barnabas. Because Barnabas was so known, his name, B-A-R, is the Aramaic for what? Son. The disciples called him the son, in the King James says improperly, not improperly, it doesn't help us today, the son of encouragement, meaning Barnabas was known by everybody for always encouraging other people. How would you like to be that person? Man, oh man. That's this fellow from Lodabar. Well, we come to the last thing. Service for simple reasons. Why did they serve? I'm asking you the question. Why did they serve? They tell you. Why did they serve? They need something to eat and they need something to drink. Can I tell you something? It's just that simple. My wife is the only person that knows this person. I used to have a guy that would call me. Every time he called me, this is what he said. Hi, Brother Ralph. How's you? How are you? How's your family? How's the church? How's the weather? How's your feet? How's your back? How's your back? And the whole time, I'm thinking one thought. What do you want? Here's what these people wanted. David, our king, is over there. Maybe my name is, I am Lodabar, nobody. Maybe I'm an Ammonite. Hey, maybe I'm an old man. But I want to help those people with food and water. Look at me, friend. Chances are, the day I die in the pulpit, which could be tonight, or Pastor Cork is so old he can no longer get me to the pulpit, I'll be forgotten very shortly. You do know that. Am I okay with that? Of course. Because here's what we're here for. We're here to serve. We're here to serve not some grandiose plan. We're here to do what we can do. Look at me. Hey, not when you get old and you don't have bills anymore. Not when your kids are grown. Not when your grandkids are grown. Right now, right here, you got to get on it. And it could just be, you'll be one of those people that's a memorialized person. But in this church, there won't be any monuments. We won't have any statues of anybody up front. You won't have your name out there that you gave 50 cents. God bless you. By the way, if you put out there $10,000 you gave, you do realize you paid two or three or four times that for your car. Why are you bragging on what you gave to God? How about let's do this? Let's just serve as an old man, as an Ammonite, and as a nobody. Can we do that? Let's just do that. Father, thank you for this text. It's beautiful.